With your Realty Check, I'm Diana Olick, CNBC Radio. Home buyers came back to the market in January, signing more contracts to buy existing homes than they have in a year and a half. But the numbers are still relatively weak, and one reason is a lack of homes for sale. Why so few? Downsizing baby boomers have a lot to do with it. Betsy Friedlander and Mike Clipper have adored their three-story colonial in suburban Bethesda, Maryland for nearly three decades. Now, with their two boys grown and gone, they're looking for a new home as part of a new, more active urban lifestyle. But after an exhaustive search of condominiums and townhomes, they learned a tough lesson about this new lifestyle. It has become incredibly expensive.
We were shocked because we thought, well, you know, we would be able to sell our house, maybe put a little money in the bank and buy something that we could be comfortable in.
What they saw was way too little for way too much money, so they gave up. Like so many baby boomers who were supposed to fuel the nation's anemic housing supply and make way for much needed new buyers. With your Realty Check, I'm Diana Olick, CNBC Radio.
This show is brought to you by Discount Tire. Your low price journey starts at Discount Tire.
The information and opinions expressed in this broadcast are intended to address specific questions asked or situations described on this program and are not designed to constitute advice or recommendations as to any disease, ailment, or physical condition. You should not act or rely upon any information contained in this broadcast without seeking the advice of your personal physician. If you have any questions about the information or opinions expressed during this broadcast, please contact your doctor.
Good afternoon, Arizona. It's time for Doctor Talk with Dr. Belinda Barclay-White, a board-certified radiologist who specializes in breast imaging and breast-related issues. And Dr. Carrie Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. This show is about your health care, your well-being, and your life. Get the latest information and answers to your questions from nationally recognized physicians and healthcare experts. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook.com/Dr. Talk and use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's Facebook.com/Dr. Talk. It's time for Dr. Talk with hosts Dr. Barclay-White and Dr. Bordinko.
So welcome to Dr. Talk on this beautiful Saturday morning in sunny Phoenix, Arizona. That's why we all live here, right? This week, we have a slightly different format because Dr. Bordinko is sick. Apparently, she has the flu. So this week, I'm going to be your host, and we've nominated a new co-host in Dr. Michael Mills, who is one of our guests this morning. And then we will be introducing our other guest, Dr. Kim. So Carrie is sick. I'm going to introduce Dr. Okay, so Dr. Mills, here we go. So Dr. Mills, where am I, is an Arizona native and a graduate of University of Arizona. Dr. Mills received his medical degree from Tulane University in 1991, where he also obtained a Master's of Public Health in Health Systems Management. After completing his internal medicine residency at the University of Colorado in Denver in 1994, Dr. Mills trained in our Good Samaritan VAMC Gastroenterology Fellowship in combination with the University of Arizona in Tucson, here in Phoenix. Dr. Mills started his academic career as assistant professor of medicine of the University of Colorado, teaching as faculty on staff at Denver Health. He returned home to Phoenix in 1999 to start a new GI practice in Central Phoenix, Arizona Digestive Health, which has grown to 63 physicians across the valley. He is medical director and founding partner of Phoenix Endoscopy and Ambulatory Surgical Center. So Dr. Mills has an academic appointment with the University of Arizona College of Medicine, Phoenix, and Creighton School of Medicine, and is program director for medical student rotations and has taught UA students and medical residents since 1999. Dr. Mills has served on two national committees for the American Society of Gastrointestinal Endoscopy and is currently on an AGA bundled payment committee. He has been recognized as a top doctor numerous times and has been designated as a fellow of the ASGE, ACG, and AGA. And he served on the board of trustees for the Arizona Foundation for Medical Care from 2001 to 2012, the last three as president.
Currently, he is on the Maricopa County Board of Health. His clinical practice has been focused on GERD, or gastroesophageal reflux, and inflammatory bowel disease and colon cancer prevention. His wife of 25 years, Dina, is a fourth-generation Arizonan who he met at Brophy High School. They have three talented children.
Wow, okay. Belinda, that might take up the whole show if we keep on that introduction.
So,
happy to be here.
So March is National Colon Cancer Awareness Month, so we're dedicating two shows to this awful disease. Today is part one, where we will be going over screening and detection of colon cancer and the surgery of colon cancer, so part one of the treatment, really, of colon cancer. And we're excited, as I said, to have Dr. Michael Mills here with me as my co-host and Dr. Kim.
Yeah, Belinda, this is so important of a topic. Happens to be, as you mentioned, March is Colon Cancer Awareness Month nationally. It's the month that you might see a blue ribbon that people might wear. Blue's the color for the representation of colon cancer, and it's a representation of someone who's lost their life to this preventable cancer.
So not so many people lose their lives these days. Isn't the rate of colon cancer death decreasing, even though actually the incidence is increasing? But
we have some good news today. Some of the good news is that because of more adoption of preventative procedures such as colonoscopy, we've been able to prevent colon cancer more frequently. But we actually still have alarming rates in other populations that we'll have a chance to talk about later in the show.
So unfortunately, colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer-related deaths in the U.S. For women, it's first breast cancer, and for men, prostate cancer.
Lung cancer.
Lung cancer. On average, your risk is about 1 in 20, so your chance of developing the disease is 1 in 20, although this risk does vary widely according to individual risk factors. So 90% of new cases occur in people 50 or older. So age is the big increased risk, right? As we get older, that the chance of us developing colon cancer is so much higher, like breast cancer, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And the current recommendations, you know, certainly involve screening at age 50. So if I happen to just turn 50 a couple months ago, and I've had my colonoscopy. So
well,
if you're out there, thank you. I did not do it to myself. I did have a relaxation and then a colonoscopy. But age 50 is that magic number. It's the present you give yourself when you turn 50.
That's a good way to think about it. But there is some talk, actually, about younger people being the increased risk of colon cancer in younger people, and we will talk about that during the show and get back to that. But certainly people with a first-degree relative, like a parent, you know, a sister or brother, or children who have a diagnosis of colon cancer, they are 2 to 3 times more likely than the general population to develop breast cancer.
And we'll talk about knowing your family history and knowing your risk factors. Those are conversations that you'll have with your physician. But if you have a first-degree relative, that means brother, sister, mother, father, son or daughter, actually, that has had colon cancer, it does put you at an increased risk.
So there are currently more than 1 million colon cancer survivors in the U.S., right?
Yeah, that's one of the great news that we have today as well, sharing this afternoon with Dr. Kim, because Dr. Kim is a skilled colorectal surgeon that I'll have a chance to introduce in a few moments, who actually can cure colon cancer through his exceptional skills that he has to remove colon cancer when it's there.
So unfortunately, the majority of colon cancers are still not found early. Unfortunately, they're found when people become symptomatic, which is very late in the disease. So common symptoms are the symptoms of many other things going on in the abdomen, and that's why often it is diagnosed late. So we really are stressing screening today, you know, how to go about that.
Absolutely, and screening is not only in this particular condition, not only can identify a cancer at an early stage to allow for a cure, but it also is potentially preventative. So by removing precancerous polyps, then we can actually prevent colon cancer. So it's an exciting opportunity to have this conversation today.
So we are going into a break now. You're listening to Dr. Talk on Money Radio 1510 AM and 99.3 FM, and we're talking about colon cancer. Please join us after the break. Do you dread having your annual screening mammogram? For a totally different experience, give Arizona BreastNet a call. Our all-female staff provides you with years of expertise and immediate results in a clean, state-of-the-art, spa-like facility that respects your mind, your body, and your time. If, on the other hand, you have a new breast lump or breast-related finding, call Arizona BreastNet today for an immediate appointment and consultation with a doctor who will give you your results at the time of your visit. At Arizona BreastNet, you will never have to wonder, worry, or wait. Get your results today and call 480-314-7600. That's 480-314-7600 for an immediate appointment, or you can visit us online at breastnet.net for more information.
When you're driving down the road, the last thing you want to think about is tires. Trust Discount Tire to get you up to speed with the right tire for your vehicle. We carry the world's best brands of tires, all at everyday low prices. At Discount Tire, we're not just about tires, we're about people. We'll get you the right tire for your vehicle to help keep you safe on the road. Stop by any Discount Tire store for a free air pressure and tire safety check. Your low price journey starts here. Discount Tire.
Your healthcare, your well-being, and your life. Now back to Dr. Talk with Dr. Barclay White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/Dr. Talk and use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's facebook.com/Dr. Talk. Now, here's your hosts, Dr. Bordinko and Dr. Barclay White.
So welcome back to Dr. Talk. Dr. Bordinko is sick this morning, so I have in the studio with me my newly nominated co-host, Dr. Michael Mills. And Dr. Michael Mills is going to introduce Dr. Kim, who is a colorectal surgeon here in town.
Thank you, Belinda. Again, we're talking about colorectal cancer today, and this is Colon Cancer Awareness Month. I have the esteemed privilege to introduce an incredibly well-respected and very advanced advanced-skilled surgeon here in town, whose name is Eugene Kim. He comes from back east, and he's actually been in Arizona for about 10 years. And within that 10 years, he clearly is in the top of his game. He currently is the section chief of colorectal surgery at what is now Banner University Medical Center, used to be called Good Samaritan, if you've noticed that in the news, and is integrally involved in teaching and research. He also has pushed the envelope in Phoenix in terms of very advanced procedures for the treatment of colorectal disease. So welcome, Gene.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to be here with you guys today to talk about this very important subject.
Well, thank you for giving up a Saturday morning. So what is colon cancer? Can we start with something basic for our listeners? What is colon cancer?
Well, colon cancer is, as you mentioned in the first segment, one of the most common cancers diagnosed usually in elderly people. And it's a cancer that starts as a growth in the colon or the rectum, usually as a precancerous lesion, what we call polyps, and eventually, if left alone and not treated, usually through colonoscopy, can turn into invasive cancer.
So as in breast cancer, there are sort of different grades of cancer. Is that so, or do all polyps start off as fairly, well, benign, and then they become low grade, and then they become high grade? What is the sort of progression?
Sure, that's true. There usually is a progression. There are polyps are the growths in the colon that, when Dr. Mills or myself do screening colonoscopies, are the things that we're looking for. to find and remove. If you go into detail, there are different kind of polyps also, but the ones we are looking for are the precancerous polyps. And then with time, they will eventually progress into more advanced lesions and eventually into invasive colon cancer.
So size matters, right? The smaller the polyp, the more likely it is to be benign. And as it becomes bigger, the more likely it is to become a cancer?
Correct.
Or do they start off as cancers?
They don't. They start out, most polyps start out as benign, small, precancerous lesions. And in general, the larger a polyp is, the greater the chance it can have cancer or turn into cancer. But there are even larger polyps that can still be precancerous and be removed before they turn into colon cancer.
And that's really the great news today, is get in and get screened, because you don't even know if you have a polyp in there. And then Dr. Kim or myself or another skilled colonoscopist would be able to go in and actually remove it. Gene, one of the things that I have questions sometimes from patients is, what's the difference between rectal cancer and colon cancer? And how do you approach that?
Sure. There's a lot of similarities, and there are some differences with colon versus rectal cancer. Primarily, it's based on the location of where the cancer is found or the polyp is found. So if it's higher up in the colon, it's called a colon cancer. When it's lower down, it's called rectal cancer. That's the last part of the digestive tract, the last 6 or 8 inches. So it's really based on the location of where the cancer is found. And then there is definitely some differences in treatment of colon versus rectal. Just to kind of summarize, when you get diagnosed with colon cancer, surgery is usually the next step we would go to in terms of treating it. With rectal cancers, there are some situations where we would treat it a little differently, meaning chemoradiation therapy then followed by surgery. And that's something you discuss with your surgeon, your oncologist, and your gastroenterologist.
But radiation is actually quite rare in the colon, right?
Radiation, correct. Radiation is usually reserved for special circumstances for colon cancers, correct. Definitely more common for certain rectal cancers.
And I think, you know, a lot of the things that people are concerned about is having to have those bypass. If you have to have colon removed or certainly rectum removed, mm-hmm. you have to have a bypass and a colostomy bag.
Correct.
But there are actually some newer techniques, even with the rectal cancers, correct? That mm-hmm. they don't have to do that full AP resection that I remember in medical school, which was so horrific, yes?
Correct. That is true. That is one of the fears that many patients will have when they come in to see me, when I'm seeing them in consultation, when they first get diagnosed. And the vast majority of colon cancers will not need something like a bag or an ostomy, like you're mentioning. And there are certain situations where these bags or ostomies are required. And we discuss that with the patient, many times temporary,
yes,
sometimes permanent.
Dr. Kim, again, getting back to the screening and prevention, which we're really, really wanting to emphasize today, some of the questions that you and I have patients ask us are things that sometimes are based on maybe a lack of information, maybe a fear, maybe a concern. But let's run through some of those common questions that patients have, and how do you address them? Like, one would be, can you have colon cancer if you have no symptoms or doesn't run in your family?
Absolutely, that is true. The reason why we usually recommend screening, and the guidelines are at the age of 50 for asymptomatic average risk individuals, is because what we had mentioned earlier in the show, that most colon cancer, in fact most polyps, which are the precancerous lesions we mentioned, are not symptomatic. They will not cause bleeding, they will not cause pain, they will not cause a change in your bowel habits, and therefore you will not know you have it. So definitely you can be asymptomatic and have polyps and cancer.
So is colon cancer a man's disease, or does it affect women equally? What is the situation?
It is not a man's disease. It's unfortunately an equal opportunity offender. In fact, I think some of the epidemiology shows that the incidence might actually be a little higher in women than men, but it's close. So, correct.
And, you know, some of the things, Gene, that we have to deal with too is barriers to getting a colonoscopy potentially, and there's fear about testing out there. Some people even worry that if they get tested, then they might die from colon cancer. They're worried about even being diagnosed. But how do you address that with a patient who's worried or has fear about getting a colonoscopy?
Sure. That's a very, very real concern that we see often. I'm sure you see in your practice also. It's the fear of going through the procedure of a screening colonoscopy, and most of that is from ignorance and really not understanding the process and really how easy it can be. The second fear I see, at least in my office, is patients are afraid that we'll find something. And you try to explain to them that that's what we're doing this for. We want to find something. We want to find it early when it's preventable and it's definitely treatable.
I think one of the fears of we're afraid you'll find something is because they remember those horrific surgeries that friends and relatives may have gone through, but that's for late stage disease. If we find this when it's a little tiny polyp, then, you know, they're not going to have those major surgeries.
Correct. And newer technologies these days, which we can get into a little later in the show with different surgeries, has made the treatment much less invasive than it used to be 30, 40 years ago. So, yes.
And I would like to address one other aspect of screening, because 10 years ago it was going to be the hot new way, virtual colonoscopy. And obviously I'm a radiologist way back in my past. But can you comment on that? I sort of understand that the disadvantage is if you see something, you've still got to go and have it dealt with.
Correct. From my perspective, and I guess we can hear what Dr. Mills' perspective is on it, is I think it definitely has its role today for screening. Number one, it's at least in my book, if someone is not going to undergo a routine standard colonoscopy, if they're going to get some type of testing, if they'll allow a virtual colonoscopy, that's better than nothing. But like you said, one of the disadvantages is that if they do find something, then they have to do a prep again, go see someone like Dr. Mills and myself, and then have a colonoscopy. The difference is with a colonoscopy, when we're there and we find it, we remove it right away. There is some radiation exposure, to it. And I think there might be some issue, Mike, I'm not sure if you know about this, regarding insurance plans and them paying for it these days. But
Oh, really? So it's not considered the primary diagnostic treatment anymore?
I mean, there are various screening modalities, and those can include your physician getting a stool specimen to look for blood in the stool. There's even a new one that was FDA approved last August called ColoGuard, and that ColoGuard is a DNA test in the stool to look for abnormal cells. Those are the stool testing that can be done to look for blood or potentially abnormal DNA. The old-fashioned tests include a barium enema.
Right.
That's an old-fashioned test that typically is not done as a screening tool. But the real test, as Dr. Kim was alluding to, that saves lives is a colonoscopy, because it's the only one that can not only identify a polyp, but also can remove it and prevent colon cancer. And that's what Gene and I are trying to do. We're trying to make colon cancer not happen. We're trying to reduce that statistic and enable people to not develop colon cancer. And just to tag on to what Gene said, when people do have a fear of a colonoscopy about what might be found, not only are we trying to find it early, but we're trying to cure it. We're trying to actually remove the cancer right then and there at colonoscopy, which we can do occasionally, or identify it at an earlier stage before there are symptoms, including blood in the stool or weight loss or abdominal pain, so that Dr. Kim can cure someone surgically from their colon cancer.
So is there a difference in how you would screen someone that you consider average risk, general population, versus someone that does have a first degree relative with a colon cancer? Would you go about screening any differently?
The main thing with that would be the age in which you would screen someone with a first degree relative. For example, I believe the guidelines these days are if you have a first degree relative, like a sibling, for example, that was diagnosed with colon cancer at 50, you would do 10 years before they were diagnosed at the age of 40.
So after the break, we're going to come back, and I would like to talk a little bit about the familial polyposis syndromes, and we will be right back after the break.
As bottom of the hour, we pause for a look at the world's news. Then we're back with Money Talk. We're Money Radio 1510 and 99.3 FM.
President Obama is speaking in Selma, Alabama, to commemorate the historic Civil Rights March across the Edmund Pettus Bridge. The nation's first black president is standing in solidarity and remembrance with survivors of the Civil Rights era.
In one afternoon, 50 years ago, so much of our turbulent history, the stain of slavery and anguish of civil war, the yoke of segregation and tyranny of Jim Crow, the death of four little girls in Birmingham, and the dream of a Baptist preacher, all that history met on this bridge.
It was 50 years ago, March 7th, 1965, when the police brutality on Black Sunday galvanized America's opposition to racial oppression in the South and brought light to the passage of the historic Civil Rights Voting Act. Mr. and Mrs. Obama plan to take a walk across the bridge when he's done speaking. I'm Molly Page.
Metro PCS is having an amazing 4G smartphone sale, just $29 after instant rebates. Get the LG Optimus L70 along with a range of other smartphones at very smart prices. No annual contracts, just $29 at Metro PCS. Hurry, Metro's smartphones are flying out the door, so find your smartphone for only $29. Only at Metro PCS. Limited time offer. In-store only. Requires activation or upgrade on $50 plan or higher. See store or metropcs.com for details, terms, and conditions.
Hey, it's Flo, and this is my impression of a Hollywood acceptance speech.
I'm so surprised! I had no idea! I'm not even prepared! Okay.
I'd like to thank the progressive discounts that got me here. Safe driver multi-car, paid in full multi-policy. This is just such a big moment. And did I mention that I'm surprised?
With all kinds of discounts, Progressive helps you save.
Oh, and I want to thank my agent and all my discounts agents because we all have the same agent. Don't start the music!
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
This show is brought to you by Discount Tire. We carry the best selection of tires and wheels at everyday low prices.
Your healthcare, your well-being, and your life. Now back to Dr. Talk with Dr. Barclay White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/Dr. Talk and use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's facebook.com/Dr. Talk. Now, here's your hosts, Dr. Bordinko and Dr. Barclay White.
So welcome back to Dr. Talk. This Saturday we are talking about colon cancer, diagnosis and surgery. And I have in the studio with me Dr. Michael Mills and Dr. Eugene Kim. So before we went into the break, we just briefly were talking about screening. And I just wanted to briefly mention the difference when a young person is diagnosed with colon cancer, as in someone over age 50. Do you treat that person any differently in the testing that you do, Dr. Kim?
That's a great question. There is, and I think we were perhaps going to mention this later, there's been some news articles about the fact that we're seeing colon cancer in younger people than traditionally, and Dr. Mills can probably attest this also. In our practice, we have probably seen a slight trend in cancer in younger people. But when we find cancer in someone that's very young, that you would totally not expect it, someone in their 20s or their 30s, that does raise some red flags where we potentially would send them some further testing to see if they have one of these, what we call hereditary colon cancer syndromes. And that really requires some special testing, perhaps sending them to a genetic counselor for some gene tests they can have done, and also getting a very accurate history of their family history, because that will tell us, again, if we think they may have one of these hereditary genetic syndromes that predisposes them to having colon cancer at an earlier age. In terms of treating them, though, it's not necessarily going to have much of a difference if they need surgery, if they need chemotherapy, et cetera.
So if a cancer is found in young or old and they need surgery, how is colon cancer treated surgically?
Colon cancer is treated surgically, and first in preparing the patient for the surgery, and then in general, we are removing that section of the colon that has the has the tumor in it, the cancer in it, with the lymph nodes that drains the area. And that is a colon resection. The majority of time we can do it, many times we can do it laparoscopically, which usually means minimally invasive. We think there's definitely some benefit to that. And then after we remove that section of the colon with the cancer, we send it to a pathologist who then gives us the final staging of the cancer. And then that will determine many things, their prognosis, if they need additional treatment, for example, chemotherapy.
So can you talk a little bit about staging? How do you stage cancer, and what difference does that make in how curable it is?
Sure. Generally, colon cancer, like most other cancers, breast, lung, and colon, has four stages to it. So we use a combination of things to stage a colon cancer. We will get some basic radiology tests, like a CT scan, for example, to make sure that the cancer hasn't already spread to other organs. And if it hasn't, which the majority have not at the time of diagnosis, like I mentioned with colon cancer, the next step is surgery, as we just mentioned. Then we get the stage back. In general, the staging can be a little confusing, but what I tell patients is that when the pathologist is looking at the lymph nodes, if any of the lymph nodes are involved with microscopic cancer, that automatically makes it stage 3 colon cancer. And that, for most people, would be treated with additional 6 months of chemotherapy. Most stage 1 and 2 colon cancers, meaning there are no lymph nodes involved, are often just treated with surgery alone and in close surveillance and observation.
Okay. And can you sort of go through briefly the risks of colon surgery, which I'm sure are the risks of any surgery generally, but just so that...
Sure. Well, a colon resection is an abdominal operation, and I tell all patients when they come in, understandably, they're very frightened and very scared about the process they're going to undergo. But I tell most patients in the end, I try to reassure them that most of the patients that undergo this operation do well and make a full recovery. We prepare them for surgery with basic things like trying to just stay healthy, and if they do smoke or do other things like that, that even in the short term, even if it's a few weeks from their surgery, they can benefit themselves from stopping smoking even for the short term. But the colon operation itself, we do a clean out the night before, similar to like a colonoscopy, and then they come into the hospital the day of the surgery. We do their colon operation, which usually takes a couple hours. And then they're in the hospital on average from anywhere from 2 to 6 days before they go home.
And overall, what are the chances that that patient may need a colostomy? I mean, obviously very dependent on stage and where it is in the colon.
It is. I would have to say for most elective colon surgeries, it is very unlikely that they would need a colostomy or a bag. That situation would be more common for what we call low rectal cancers, where you are not able to connect someone back together.
Gene, could you describe what a colostomy actually is for the folks out there?
A colostomy is just a general term, is what we call an ostomy. It's when you make a hole in the abdominal wall and you're bringing a portion of your intestine out through the abdominal wall and suturing it to the skin where it heals, and then that's where the waste and stool will exit out and into a bag. So that's an ostomy.
And that allows your anastomosis, so the area that you've cut the cancer out, to heal, right? Because you don't want stool going through that while it's
correct.
Healing?
Yes and no. There are certain instances, as you had mentioned at the beginning of the show, is if it's a permanent ostomy, when you remove, for example, for a rectal cancer, you have to remove their entire rectum, then sometimes the colostomy is permanent. And they would have no, you would not be able to connect them back together. But there are certain instances, certain operations where we place a temporary bag. In that instance, you're just what we call diverting the stool away from the connection. And then it's usually another minor operation to close the ostomy, or what we call reverse the ostomy, at a later time, so they don't have a permanent bag.
So how long on average would that patient be in the hospital?
2 to 6 days on average for most colon operations.
Wow, so much shorter than it used to be. That's amazing. And then what's the post-operative recovery? So when the patient leaves the hospital, what can they do and what can't they do, and for how long?
Most patients, when they leave the hospital, are then going to go back home and continue their recuperation at home. Most are able to do light activity right away. We tell them, obviously, to take it easy, but we like them to walk and try to maintain their normal life as much as possible. They're usually on regular food, maybe a mildly modified diet for a week or two. Not much different than that. And then each week gets better for them. And usually after about 3 or 4 weeks, they're pretty much close to where they started.
One of the things, Gene, that we've been talking about is trying to prevent the need for surgery, obviously. And going back to that, I mean, the great news is under the amazing care of Dr. Kim and his colleagues, you can be cured of colon cancer. And obviously, if it's not a cure, you can be resected, and that can have a result that's a positive result. One of the things that, in addition to the colonoscopy, which, by the way, one of the reasons we're here today talking about colonoscopy is that only about 65% to 70% of those eligible to get a screening colonoscopy are getting them. We still have about 30% that are coming in with advanced cancers because there are no symptoms because they never got screened. But one of the things I wanted to talk about with Dr. Kim is what are the things that can be done for folks out there to potentially prevent colon cancer with their diet and their behavior? You mentioned smoking. We all know that smoking is terrible for your health. Obviously, there are other potential things that can be done. What are some of the things that you recommend to patients in terms of their lifestyle?
Many of the things that we recommend in terms of lifestyle are the things that we recommend just for a generally healthy lifestyle style overall. For example, a diet high in fiber, fruits and vegetables, greeny vegetables. They have a lot of antioxidants in them, and they prevent not only colon cancer but a lot of other cancers. Exercise has always been shown to be very good for someone's overall health. What else?
Well, certainly avoiding excessive animal fat,
red meat.
Obesity as well. So many of these things are within your control to be able to make good choices.
And there are some things now that are becoming talked about, like calcium as being protective against colon cancer, and vitamin D, right? That's the hot topic right now. Vitamin D seems to be good for everything.
Correct, and for that reason, we usually recommend patients to, if they're not eating a healthy diet, you can add some of that to your diet with just a multivitamin in your diet. Also, there are some studies that have shown that just people that are taking the aspirin once a day for their heart health have a slightly lower incidence, and we talk about just general populations, not necessarily on an individual-to-individual basis, but things like that can lead to a lower incidence of colon cancer.
And then people that have ulcerative colitis have a higher risk for colon cancer, probably because of the inflammation that's going on. So with all of these things we're talking about, is that the key, decreasing the inflammatory reaction?
Well, that's
in the body.
That's one aspect, and that of course would be a whole nother show. But
yes.
Correct.
Yeah.
Ulcerative colitis is an inflammatory condition, and chronic inflammation has been shown to perhaps lead to a higher incidence of cancer. Correct.
And of course, someone that's diagnosed with a colon cancer has an increased risk for actually having a second colon cancer. So it's never too late to start with dietary changes and lifestyle changes. And then, how do we follow a patient after the diagnosis? I mean, how much follow-up are you doing now?
Sure.
How often do they have to have colonoscopies, et cetera?
You know, once you have been diagnosed with a colon cancer and hopefully have had your surgery and given your stage and recovered fully, how I personally do it is it depends on if a patient, for example, is followed by an oncologist. But if not, for example, if it was stage 1 or 2 and they're not seeing an oncologist and they have completed their surgery, generally, most colon cancers, if you're going to have a recurrence, which hopefully will not happen, 85% will occur within the first 2 years after surgery. And then about the residual 90 to 95, the first 5 years after surgery. So for that reason, my personal surveillance on patients is the most aggressive the first 2 years after surgery. I will see them in the office every 3 months after surgery, get some basic blood work, do a physical exam. And then in a year after their colon resection, we'll send them back either to Dr. Mills, if he's the one that diagnosed it with the colonoscopy, for what we call a surveillance colonoscopy. We'll go from there in terms of the colonoscopies. If it's completely clear, Dr. Mills might say, okay, we need to do one now in 3 years. If they have more polyps on that one colonoscopy, then we might have to stay aggressive and do it every 1 to 2 years, because obviously they have the propensity to develop the cancer in the first place.
And that is the power of the colonoscopy. If you have a normal exam, which we haven't mentioned, you don't have to have another one for 10 years. That's a long time. So once every 10 years. Hopefully by then you will have forgotten about that night in the bathroom to cleanse your colon. And as Dr. Kim just mentioned, if you have precancerous polyps or you have had colon cancer, then you have to come back a little bit sooner.
So we are going into another break. You're listening to Dr. Talk on Money Radio, 1510 AM and 99.3 FM. Remember, you can join the conversation in our Facebook page, facebook.com/Dr. Talk, hashtag Dr. Talk, or the blog at drtalkblog.com. We'll be right back after the break.
Driving down the road, the last thing you want to think about is tires. Trust Discount Tire to get you up to speed with the right tire for your vehicle. We carry the world's best brands of tires, all at everyday low prices. At Discount Tire, we're not just about tires, we're about people. We'll get you the right tire for your vehicle to help keep you safe on the road. Stop by any Discount Tire store for a free air pressure and tire safety check. Your low price journey starts here. Discount Tire.
Join board-certified and personal physician Dr. Carrie Bordinko every Saturday afternoon at 1 p.m. on Money Radio 1510 AM and 99.3 FM for Dr. Talk, where we put healthcare back in your hands. Each week, we'll have a full panel of nationally known medical experts as guest speakers, taking an in-depth look at the issues that affect us all and matter most. Tune in this Saturday at 1 p.m. for Dr. Talk.
Your healthcare, your well-being, and your life. Now back to Dr. Talk with Dr. Barclay White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/Dr. Talk and use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's facebook.com/Dr. Talk. Now, here's your hosts, Dr. Bordinko and Dr. Barclay White.
Welcome back to Dr. Talk. I have here in the studio with me Dr. Michael Mills and Dr. Eugene Kim, and we're talking about colon cancer, diagnosis, prevention, and treatment. First of all, I'd like to address some of the myths, though. So the first myth is that colon cancer is a Caucasian man's disease.
We touched on this a little earlier, and that obviously is a myth that is not true. We discussed that colon cancer affects both men and women almost equally, and also not just Caucasian males. There actually might be a slightly higher incidence. Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, in African American population.
Yes.
So, all races are affected by this horrible disease.
And as Gene had mentioned earlier, this is what I refer to as an equal opportunity killer.
Mm.
And we're really talking about you can save your life. You can save your life by having a colonoscopy. It's really that simple. And specifically in regards to African Americans, the current recommendations are that you should have your first average risk screening colonoscopy at age 45, which is 5 years younger than that of the rest of the population. Although we don't know why, it appears that African Americans can get more advanced colon cancer at an earlier age.
And we touched earlier on the fact that colon cancer is occurring in younger and younger people, so it may well be that the age of that first screening may have to be decreased, yes, but as of yet, probably insurance doesn't pay for it. Myth number two, I don't have any symptoms, so I must not have colon cancer.
Yeah. Belinda, this is probably one of the biggest myths out there that both Dr. Kim and I have to combat with education, communication, with clarity in our conversations with patients, and hopefully with those patients then talking with their family members about getting screened. Again, it's too late. By the time someone has symptoms, it's really too late. And then Dr. Kim is having to tell someone that wasn't able to cure them from the colon cancer, that they had waited for far too long with symptoms. And those symptoms that you would want to absolutely be seen by your physician, you know, include blood in the stool. That's completely unexplained. You need to have that worked out, or abdominal pain or unexplained weight loss. But the most important thing I'm going to say is that this is a cancer that develops and grows and grows and grows with no symptoms.
Right.
Until it's too late.
Right. Very like breast cancer. Myth number three, colonoscopy is difficult to prepare for. One of you would like to address that.
Sure. When I tell my patients when we're scheduling them for their colonoscopy, and perhaps it's their first one so they have no experience, is that the usually the toughest part, if you want to call it tough, is the preparation. And I tell patients that there is a clean out we do the day before. We usually modify their diet with a clear liquid diet. Everyone does it a little differently, but my perspective, I have them a clear liquid diet after breakfast, and then they drink this different type of what we call a bowel preparation that cleans them out that night before. And then the day of the colonoscopy itself, it's really not that we do under mild sedation, kind of like a twilight sleep, so they're very comfortable. So the most troubling part of it is the prep, the bowel prep the day before. And usually even that is more tolerable than they were expecting.
So that you no longer have to give yourself an enema the morning of?
Right. We do not. We for the most part, most endoscopists don't require that. And I always, like Dr. Mills is saying, the most important that you have to keep their mind on the goal here is that we're trying to prevent colon cancer. So one day, one night of inconvenience can save a life. It's definitely worth
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and one of the things that a friend of mine who is with the Colon Cancer Alliance, which is a great organization for you to look up on the internet. It's the Colon Cancer Alliance, and it's a group nationally, but they have a local chapter. And a friend of mine who's in that was diagnosed at age 38, and she and I have been on the radio a few times, and she likes to say, as I just mentioned, it's just one night in the bathroom to save your life. So while the myth may not be entirely not a myth, because the prep, I still tell people, the prep is not fun. But to save your life one night, that's all it is.
True.
Absolutely, I agree. The next, colonoscopy is unpleasant and uncomfortable. Well, I must say the ones that I've had, I don't remember anything. It was
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's the fact. The fact is that in today's environment here in Phoenix, you're going to have an experience in which you're sedated. You might or might not have an anesthesiologist or an anesthetist, and you'll be mostly asleep for that procedure. As Gene had mentioned, the worst part really is, after what patients tell me, the worst part was the prep the night before. The colonoscopy is a breeze, and it really should be relatively uncomfortable. And again, because of the sedatives that you're given, because of the medications that you're given, you pretty much wake up afterwards. And I've had two colonoscopies, and on both occasions, I woke up afterward and said, it's all done. Okay.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's the most
exactly.
common.
Exactly. It really isn't tough at all. And I'm definitely a wussy. So I saw Katie Couric get a colonoscopy on the Today Show. So should I get one? A common question.
Well, like we mentioned, the key point of this talk is if you're over 50 and you're average risk and have no symptoms, still, yes, you should.
Yes.
If you have never had one, absolutely.
Yes, but definitely not on television. I don't think right. you should do that, right? Colonoscopy is the only way to screen for colon cancer.
No, that's a myth as well. And it's clearly the option that has been identified to not only identify but also prevent colon cancer, so it's the only one that is preventative. But you can talk with your physician about a shorter scope, which is called a flexible sigmoidoscopy, that stool test that we talked about earlier. So you could talk about those other options, but most likely the ideal test, the best test, is a colonoscopy.
So how many cancers occur in the sigmoid compared with the remainder of the colon, which you wouldn't even look at with a sigmoidoscopy?
Well, that's actually what has happened in the last 20 years, is more than 62% of cancers occur out of reach of the short scope, which
right.
is called the flexible sigmoidoscopy, which is only a half a test. And in fact, The right thing to do is the full complete colonoscopy if you don't have other contraindications to have that test done. So,
okay. So another myth, a polyp means I have cancer.
That is not true. A polyp is, for the most part, majority are precancerous. So they are not, by definition, cancer yet, most of them, obviously. So if we remove the polyp and the pathologist looks at it and tells us it's a precancerous polyp, it's usually considered treated, and so it's not cancer.
And that's an important point, is that, which is a little bit different than it was 20 years ago, but we do tell patients that they have precancerous polyps because that means they have to come back in 3 to 5 years. If they have polyps that are removed, because not all polyps are equal, if the polyps are non-precancerous, then that's the equivalency of not having any polyps there at all. But Jean and I can't tell when we look at a polyp, so we have to remove all polyps. There are no such thing as a good polyp. We don't leave that behind. We take all polyps and send them off to the laboratory to look under the microscope to determine what type of polyp they are.
So if you biopsy a polyp, you snare the polyp and you take out the neck and as much of it as you can. If there's cancer in that polyp, do you have to go back then or not?
That is a very good question, and it really depends on how large the polyp was, the configuration of the polyp. So there are different factors. There is the potential that that can be considered treated and used closely observed.
Okay. Okay. So on an individual basis,
sure.
Those are judged.
Yes, absolutely.
Myth number 8, colonoscopy is just a screening technique. I think we've talked about that. But
absolutely, and that's what we're hammering home today, is not only is it a screening test, which you should have, but it also can prevent colon cancer.
Absolutely, by removing the polyp.
Correct.
Yes. So what percentage of screening colonoscopies do you guys do that actually turn out to have cancerous polyps? Do you have that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we actually now are involved in quality metrics, quality measurements that the government is asking us to provide, and we're doing so happily. And truly, 35% of men have precancerous polyps, 25% of women have precancerous polyps, cancer in 1% of those we screen.
Good, good information. So we've come to the end of our show, Dr. Talk. We were with Dr. Mills and Dr. Eugene Kim here in the studio. Hopefully you've enjoyed this week's show. And we will be back next week with part 2 of colon cancer, talking about chemotherapy and other treatments.
You've been listening to Dr. Talk with Dr. Barclay White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordico, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. If you missed any part of this show, please go to moneyradio.com and listen to the audio archive. For additional information or to have your questions answered live on the air, send an email to drtalkaz@gmail.com. Be sure to tune in to Dr. Talk this and every Saturday afternoon from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on Money Radio 1510 and 99.3 FM. The information and opinions expressed in this broadcast are intended to address specific questions asked or situations described on this program and are not designed to constitute advice or recommendations as to any disease, ailment, or physical condition. You should not act or rely upon any information contained in this broadcast without seeking the advice of your personal physician. If you have any questions about the information or opinions expressed during this broadcast, please contact your doctor.
Do you need to sell your home and want to get top dollar using a proven marketing system? How about a guarantee to sell your home in 59 days or less? Be sure to listen to Brian from the Yelder team at Home Smart as he joins Ken Morgan on Business for Breakfast this and every Friday morning at 7:24 for a new segment called Buyers and Sellers. Brian will discuss preparation, marketing strategy, and what buyers are looking for to get your top dollar for your home. So tune in for Buyers and Sellers this and every Friday at 7:24 a.m. right here on Money Radio 1510 a.m. and 99.3 FM.
Mondays are the most profitable day of the week. when you listen to Money Making Mondays with the Microcap Master, Evan Greenberg, Chief Investment Strategist for the Legend Cap Opportunity Fund. For more info, call Evan at 516-662-0303. That's 516-662-0303. Or email Evan at legendcapfunds.com. And tune in Mondays at 1 p.m. for Money Making Monday.
Money is what we talk about. We're Money Radio 1510, KFNN Mesa Phoenix, and 99.3 FM K2.